Hello, and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday morning. Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, where I think Tim Bontemps, you're going to New York in a little bit.
I'll be at Sixers Nets tonight, Thursday night, with our own Nick Friedell.
Ooh.
Very good. Nick Friedell. And joining us from the protocols, man. Tim McMahon, the second visit to the protocols in the last few months. I'm starting to think it's this pod, man. I'm worried for Bontemps because like 15 minutes after we did the show last week, McMahon, you informed me, banned McMahon, that you were back in the protocols. And then Monday, Bobby Marks joins the show. And like, again,
yeah,
I'm still doing the ad reads. And he texts me, yeah, I just tested positive. So I'm worried about Bontemps. Bontemps, be careful, buddy.
I will be careful in New York.
Well, the good news is symptoms are very light, basically just a little runny, stuffy nose. You know, I tell you what, though, I was reading Woj and Baxter's story on the, you know, just the whole situation that the NBA is dealing with. And in there, it said Bruce Brown had tested positive, had the Delta in September. And then tested positive again. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, no. I had it in August, and sure enough, I got it again. Masked, vaxxed, boosted, all that kind of stuff. And just, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Well, you're like a lot of NBA players. Yeah, you're like a lot of NBA players right now. So
without the bank account, that's for sure.
Well, thank you for joining us, all things considered. So we're going to talk about one of your teams that you specialize in, the Grizzlies, in a little bit. But we can't talk about what we're going to talk about with the Grizzlies, which is the emergence this season of Desmond Bane, Bontemps, without talking a little bit about the Celtics, who traded Desmond Bane to the Grizzlies, and who just had one of the worst three-point shooting nights in the history of the game that you were at. On Wednesday night when they lost to the Clippers, who, you know, look, every team is, except for the Jazz, every team is, to a certain extent is being, you know, impacted right now. Some drastically, some minorly. The Clippers are, you know, they lost Paul George for a month with a elbow injury and they've got some guys, but they still got the win. And they got the win, Bontemps, because the Celtics went 4 of 42 on threes. Jaylen Brown went 1 of 13, which has got to be one of the most brutal shooting performances. You know, with it's hard to shoot 9%. I think that's what they shot, right? 9%.
Yeah.
It's really hard to shoot 9% because you gotta be a little for a lot to get 9%. 10%, 1 out of 10. You know, it can happen. 9%, that's a hard number to hit.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable going through the, you know, through our stats and information group last night, looking at second spectrum tracking data, looking at just historical numbers. I mean, the list of, there was like a 6 bullet point list of numbers in my story about this game, about how bad the Celtics shot. They were 4 for 39 on catch and shoot threes. Which was the single worst catch and shoot 3-point performance in all of Second Spectrum's tracking data games going back, I think, 9 years. There were 482 games where a team shot at least 35 threes. The Celtics shot worse than any team in any of those games. They had the biggest difference between what their effective field goal percentage should have been in a game compared to what it was of any team this season. It was almost 20 points lower than it should have been. And all of that lined up with the eye test watching the game where, in a rare night for the Celtics, who have struggled to move the ball this year, they actually moved the ball pretty well and got one completely wide open shot after another and literally missed all of them. It was unbelievable to watch. You know, people are going crazy because Jaylen Brown had 36 field goal attempts and no assists. He had 8 potential assists and I think all of them were for wide open corner threes, not even like wing threes, wide open corner threes that all missed. I mean, it was wild to watch in real time.
And there's definitely been some spotlight on Jaylen Brown's playmaking or lack thereof. And
right,
you know, going back, I mean, Marcus Smart kind of put him and Tatum on blast and all that kind of stuff. But one thing about getting assists that is a very critical part of that whole thing, is somebody has to make a shot.
So, that is the key part. You have to pass it, and then they have to make it.
Yeah, you can
make it going on.
Yeah, you can make all, you can pass as well as you can. But if guys are bricking threes, then 36 shots is a lot, though.
it's a lot of shots. But you got to remember, no Dennis Schroeder, no Marcus Smart, no Jason Tatum, right? So they don't have, the Celtics don't have a lot of guys who can create their own shot. And Ty Lue, coach of the Clippers, was running a lot of zone last night. They're down a bunch of guys, like Brian said. And so Jaylen Brown was really the only guy who could get downhill and score. So if he wasn't getting to the rim, the ball sort of had to move around the perimeter to somebody getting an open shot, and they just missed them all. But
can I ask a question on Marcus Smart real quick?
Yeah.
Because there's the injury reports on the NBA are so long that I just can't keep track of it right now.
Yeah, he cut his hand in the Bucks game on Christmas Day. That's why he hasn't played the last couple of games.
Okay,
because I think it's listed as a hand laceration or something.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to check on that because, you know, previously in Marcus's career, he had a hand laceration that was as a result of punching a mirror.
Yes. Ime Udoka said on Monday that he cut his hand somehow during the Bucks game.
To miss multiple games with a cut, that's a cut hand is, you know, that's the last thing they need. So the Celtics, so that was just look, they haven't shot the ball well this year. They're 24th in 3-point shooting as a team. And beyond this is, a terrible shooting night. Bontemps, you talked about, a month ago, you talked about how difficult their December was going to be, and it has walloped them. They have lost. They play the Suns on New Year's Eve, so it's not getting any easier. They are now 3 games under 500. They've lost 4 of 5. The schedule this month has been particularly difficult, even with who's been in and out. I mean, they had a West Coast trip where they went 1-4, which wasn't that surprising. They have a couple of nice wins and they have a couple of close losses. They got a close loss to the 76ers, a close loss to the Warriors. They played them really well, but there's, at the end of the day, they're still 16-19 and they still, have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum putting up numbers, but not putting up great play. And so, we're going to examine this trade that they made where they may have traded away a really good player in Desmond Bane in a minute, but state of the Celtics, what are we talking about right now?
Well, the irony of your comment about their month of December is they actually had managed it pretty well up until the past 3 days. Going into the game Monday in Minnesota against the Timberwolves, they were 5-7 in December against the schedule where coming into the month, every team had a 500 or better record. And with playing a Minnesota team that had 7 of its top 8 players out due to COVID, and then playing a Clipper team yesterday, Wednesday, that had several players out, mostly due to injury, but also a couple guys due to COVID, including Paul George and Reggie Jackson, let alone Kawhi Leonard, who hasn't played all year. They had a real chance to get to 7-7 going into this Phoenix game. And if you could have told the Celtics coming into the month, hey, you guys are going to be 7-8 in December, they would have ran to the bank with that. And they're like, this is great. Get through this month. The schedule gets a lot easier. We could tread water and then take off. Instead, they have probably their worst loss of the season, just get completely destroyed in the second half against a decrepit Minnesota team. And then have, like you said, what is just a historically fluky bad shooting game, but still go 4-42 from 3 at home and lose to the Clippers. Now you're sitting at 5-9 for the month of December, going into playing the Suns in the last game of the month, game you're probably not going to win. And now you're looking at being 5-10. And those two games, really make their whole month look a lot different. And in general here, when you look at their team, they've sort of been exactly what I thought they were going to be coming into the season, in that they had a team that had a chance to be a really good defensive team. And Boston currently sits 9th in the league in defense. And to me, the thing that was going to determine whether they're going to be a good team or a mediocre team was whether their offense was going to be pretty good to good or pretty mediocre to pretty bad. And they sit 22nd in the league in offense. And if you're 9th in the league in defense and you're 22nd in the league in offense, that averages out to about 15th. And that means you're about a 500 team. And over the past year and a half season and a half of NBA basketball, the Celtics are, they were 500 last year. They're 3 games under 500 right now. They are a 500 basketball team. And to your point, if you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, two of the, you know, better young wing players in the league, and you're sitting at 500 or a little under 500 over a, I guess that's what, 100 game sample size now, doesn't say a lot for the situation your team is in. And it opens up some pretty big questions about what this team has to try to do.
Also, like to point out that they have a top five payroll, I believe, as well. So,
yeah, I don't know if it's quite that high, but they're in the luxury tax this year, and they're three games under 500.
Okay, right. So, you know, if you're ownership, you know, the Celtics, they will spend money, but they're judicious about it. They're very careful. Okay, they're seventh. I apologize. They're seventh. In overall salary, $145 million in the tax.
Yep.
Behind Utah, though. Enjoy Ryan Smith, your new billionaire owner, Jazz.
Yeah. No wonder Danny Ainge jumped ship.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're spending a luxury tax for a team that's right now essentially tied for 10th with Toronto as we do this.
Tied with Toronto and Atlanta for 10th.
Right. They lose to the Suns, which maybe, you know, it's the NBA right now. It's hard to know. You know, Devin Booker is hot right now. He's back from his issues, and he's ripping people up. Maybe they surprise people, win that game. But if you lose that game, you're going into the new year potentially in 12th as a luxury tax team. It's not good. And so, Bontemps, you've said this. You believe that they should be banging on, you know, this has been rumored. It's not like this is the first time this is being said. Lots of people are rumoring it. Lots of people have been on Photoshop, slapping Ben Simmons in next to Jason Tatum in a Celtics jersey. But you believe that they should be banging on the Sixers' door, trying to figure out a way to make a deal.
Well, look, it's like I said before. They have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And to me, you know, there some people would argue, you know, hey, they need to trade one of these guys. They don't fit together, et cetera. I think that is nonsense. If you look at the numbers for the Celtics, when Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are on the court together, they are, I think, plus 7 or 8 per 100 possessions better than their opponents. Like, those two guys are really good players, and they're the most desirable commodity in the league, which is a two-way wing player. I mean, for the season, after a couple losses, they're still 4 points per 100 better when those two guys are playing together. Like, the Celtics' problems are not Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. It is the roster fit around them. And in particular, it's the fact that they have a lot of guys on their team who like to pound the ball into the ground and either shoot or drive and then maybe pass later. And there are five perimeter guys who play, the two stars, and then Josh Richardson, Marcus Smart, and Dennis Schroeder. Those guys are all like that. And so their offense generally gets bogged down, and it leads to them taking a lot of hard isolation shots, which is a big reason why they don't score very well. And so, to me, I'd be calling Daryl Morey every day and saying, I'm not trading you Jason Tatum. I'm not trading you Jaylen Brown. Tell me what you want. You want 4 first-round picks? Do you want the rights to 7 first-round picks?
No, Marcus Martin? No, no. And I'm like, Daryl Morey. Well, no, I'm trying to win right now at Joel Embiid.
Well, listen.
So, yes, I want Jaylen Brown. If you're not talking about Jaylen Brown, we're not having a conversation.
Well, and that's fair. And it might not be – they might not be able to get a deal done, right? I'm not saying that they have the ammo necessarily to do it. But I'd be on – anytime Philly's trying to do a deal with somebody, I'd be trying to get involved and find any way I could to get Ben Simmons on the Celtics.
Because any way you could is making Jalen Brown available.
Unless you can work some kind of three-team deal.
Well, I'm just saying, here's my point. The Celtics should not be trading either of those two guys.
Okay.
So what they need to do is try to get creative to try to find a way to get another guy with them, because the group they have around them just isn't very good, frankly. The things that they struggle at, they don't push the pace. They play very slow. They don't move the ball. They need guys around, those two guys that don't need the ball. And when they do get it, they either shoot it or kick it to somebody else. And like you look at what the Chicago Bulls did this offseason, getting guys like Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, two guys that either hit a spot up shot or catch it and move it and play great defense around Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, two guys who hold the ball and do what they're going to do and then kick the ball to other people. That's the kind of formula that I think the Celtics need to try to emulate.
Well, if they need spot up shooters, Ben Simmons would be a great fit.
Well, if you have Ben Simmons playing with those two guys and Al Horford, like I just think that Ben Simmons in Boston, I think it's the single best fit for him stylistically in the league if he could get there. Now, again, I don't think they can, they don't have a lot of ammunition otherwise, right? That's why I'm saying like this would be like the James Harden trade with that the Nets made. Like, we'll give you
except,
every single
except
pick
for
we
there's
have.
No way Philly's going into rebuild mode with Joel Embiid.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Like it, like you said, it might end up like the only way it could probably realistically happen is if it's like a third team involved and it's like that team gets whatever 10
right.
picks.
Well, we're going to talk right now instead of four picks. We're going to talk right now about Desmond Bane.
Wendy, I feel like Bontemps has been the Jaylen Brown of this pod. He's taking a lot of shots, not making very many points, and he ain't passing the ball.
I think he's speaking like somebody who's around the Celtics a lot. You know,
the big point to me, the biggest point about the Celtics is that they're in a really difficult spot, and the only way I think they could get out of it is if they make some really creative, big decisions. And I think like. If they trade Jaylen Brown,
they already got their gift trade of the last decade.
Yes, I covered the other side of that at the time. If they try to trade Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, to me, that's just going to end up them spinning their wheels in the same spot. Like the only way they have a chance to go up is if they find some creative ways to build this roster up around them, which is going to be really hard to do with the assets they have, which just there aren't a lot of them.
Well, Trader Danny is gone. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. So you're also talking about, you know, some of the front office is still there, but you're talking about a new lead executive in Brad Stevens that you're asking to make a very nuanced move.
Yep. And the temperature here is only going to go up whenever the right. football season ends. If this team continues to be floundering, the temperature is going to go way up. Yeah, and I especially with no Red Sox being playing likely in the spring because of the lockout in baseball, like all the attention is going to be on the Celtics and it's going right. to be interesting. You know,
Ainge made the Garnett trade. Ainge made the Ray Allen trade. Ainge made the Pierce Garnett trade that set them up. You know, his track record.
He did Kyrie trade.
He made the Kyrie trade, which ended up not working out, but it was still a hell of a trade. His, you know, the Isaiah Thomas trade. Trader Danny, yep. He had a great record for being able to step in and make moves like are required right now. We'll see.
See what Brad Stevens can do.
One guy they don't have to trade, McMahon, is Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane is having an absolutely brilliant second season for the Grizzlies.
And we set up why the Celtics don't have Desmond Bane?
Yes. Okay. Of course. Well, before, so this is McMahon's turf. He knows the Grizzlies well. Let me just take you back. And I don't like saying that the Celtics should have had Bane because
there's 29 teams that should have had him because he should have, well, at least 25, I would say.
So there were virtually the entire NBA should have had him. Yes.
Okay. Well, hold on. So in the 2020 draft, the Celtics had 3 first round picks and a second round pick. They actually had the Grizzlies pick, that pick that for years looked like it was going to be very valuable and ended up being the 14th pick. They took Aaron Nesmith, with the 14th pick. So they took a wing, and a lot of people thought Neesmith, who I think shot over 50% his last year at Vanderbilt. A lot of people thought he was the best shooter in the draft. Well, the Celtics needed shooting. They, in the lottery, took a guy who was arguably regarded as one of the best shooters in the draft, or maybe the best shooter. Then they had the 26th pick, which was their pick. And they drafted Peyton Pritchard out of Oregon, a four-year player who is now starting for them due to their circumstances.
Yep.
And has had some moments, but
he's been fine.
You know, Pac-12 player of the year, again, a perimeter player, more of a volume scorer, but, you know, could hit the outside shot creator. In the 30th pick, and Danny Ainge said going into that draft, we are not having four rookies on this team. And that makes sense. I think very few teams would want four rookies unless you're the Houston Rockets in their rotation or whatever. And so they traded the pick. Now, the way they traded the pick was interesting. It was basically a salary dump. They traded.
It wasn't basically a salary dump. It was a salary dump.
They dumped Enes Kanter Freedom. I don't know. What's the proper thing? Do you call him Enes Freedom, or he was Kanter when they traded him? I don't know.
I call him can't play.
they have back now, but they offloaded the $5 million that they would have paid him in the deal. Kanter ended up in Portland, and
to get out of the tax
the luxury tax. And they also didn't have to pay the $2 million they would have paid the 30th pick. So it was something in the neighborhood of a $7 million move, plus taking him out of the tax, which saved him a whole bunch more money. That was their move. They got two future second round picks for that, but they also moved out of the tax. And like, look, they had just drafted Neesmith and Pritchard, two perimeter players that addressed their shooting issues. I think they were going to trade the 30th pick belonged to the Bucks. I don't even remember how they got it.
They got it in a trade with Aaron Baines the year before from Phoenix.
Ooh.
Another move that was a money saving move.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good move because Baines had a great year in Phoenix. All right. So that happened, and Bane went to Memphis. Memphis has drafted extremely well. And in the 2020 draft, they may have had a transformational draft in this era because they took Ja Morant second. That was their pick. Ja Morant second. What was the 14th pick? I'm confused. Now I'm confusing myself. No, that was the year before they took Ja Morant. They took Ja Morant 29.
Yeah, they got Ja Morant and Brandon Clark the year before.
My fault. Okay. So anyway, they draft Bane. They trade up for the 30th pick and get Bane, and as a 3-and-D guy. But McMahon, he looks like he's more than a 3-and-D guy.
And so last year, Bane was like a nice, ready to play 3-and-D guy. And it was like, wow, that's a really good value pick at number 30. This year, it's like, wow, Desmond Bane is one of the best young wings in the league. Like this guy, Ja Morant is on a Twitter campaign for Desmond Bane to be most improved player. And he's got a case. This guy, if you look, and I don't know if you guys follow Andrew Bailey on Twitter. He's a nerdy numbers guy, and he does these things where he does these blind player comps. And I suggested this one to him. It was Desmond Bane this season and age 23 Klay Thompson. Well, Thompson, in the little poll, Thompson won it because of net rating swing, but all the other numbers, points per game, rebounds, assist, threes made, shooting efficiency. Desmond Bane is comparable or better than age 23 Klay Thompson. And I'm not sitting here saying he's going to be as great as Klay was, but what I'm telling you is, like, stop looking at Desmond Bane as – wow, really good value late in the first round, and start considering, dude, the Grizzlies are a solid fourth in the Western Conference, and Desmond Bane is going to be part of that foundation for a long, long time, alongside, of course, Ja Morant, who, in particular, these last two games has reminded us what a young superstar he is, where he goes for, 30-whatever, and makes a ridiculous shot beating Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges
might have been an offensive foul.
It might have been a walk, whatever. The ball went in.
Right. It was a great shot.
You know, and it shows the combination of Cajone's athleticism and yeah. finesse and skill that he has that is so rare. That game, by the way, both Ja Morant and Bane had 30-plus points. The first time a backcourt that young has both had 30-plus in a game since Iverson and Stackhouse. Unlike Iverson and Stackhouse, I don't think you're going to see Bane decide that he didn't want to play with that dude. There are a lot of Iverson comparisons to Morant, except Morant is a pure point guard and a gifted passer and playmaker. And then last night, honestly, it was an off night for Bane. 3 of 10. Now, 3 of 10 would have looked awfully good in the Celtics on him. 3 of 10 from three. But they still combined for 61 in a win over the Lakers. Morant, in a game where LeBron was, you know, pretty much at peak LeBron level. I mean, LeBron
had one of the greatest three-point shooting nights of his career.
Yeah, and then Ja also did. And Ja goes for 41 in that game. And, you know, the Grizzlies go on this comeback. Bane and Morant combined for 61. And you guys, you know, you think I'm being a little hyperbolic here, but when we discuss the best backcourts in the league, not the best young backcourts, when we discuss the best backcourts in the league, your little Grizzlies combo has barged their way into that conversation.
I was going to say, you didn't explain why you might be hyperbolic. Now explain.
Okay. I declared on our group chat that they are a top five backcourt.
Okay. So here now, we get to the fun part of the pod.
And listen, Ja Morant declared last year he's a top five point guard.
Now listen, I love the take, first of all. I love Ja Morant. Desmond Bane is great. We go back to the Celtics for 1 second. You want to know why the Celtics don't have a lot of assets? They drafted at the 14th pick 2 years in a row, Romeo Langford and Aaron Nesmith. Desmond Bane is about 10 times better at minimum than both those guys. You put him on the Celtics, things would immediately look a lot different.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's a great fun take. Now, I went through the league last night at halftime of this atrocious game that I was at, and I have 16 backcourt combinations. So we're going to go through.
You have
and rank
16?
Them. Well, I went through, I didn't pick some that were not going to be in the conversation, but I went through and picked, I got 16 of them. We're going to go through and see where they rank.
I whittled it down to 7, but go on.
Well, I just went through a bunch of them. Some of them I think they'll be ahead of clearly, but
okay.
So, all right. So let's just go through and see where they rank. So Desmond Bane and Ja Morant or Kyrie and James Harden?
Kyrie and James Harden. That's one of the.
What about Lonzo Ball and Zach LaVine?
That's one that is certainly one of my 7. And, you know, we can get into it's debatable. Certainly Lonzo and it's interesting. I actually looked at I got super nerdy with this and looked at net rating and the LaVine Ball combo. I was surprised is just, you know, they're plus, but it's not by much. But look, Ball is one of the great complementary players in the league among guards right now, and LaVine's a star. So I will grant that one is debatable.
And these are all for this season. Well, obviously, their upside going forward is very high. Kyle Lowry and Tyler Hero. I know where Brian's going to go with this one. I'm pretty confident.
Well, I mean, Lowry and Morant are different ends of their career. I mean, you know,
I know, but it's a question about this year, though. It's Tim saying top five right now. I was saying that because your boy Tyler Hero is in the combination. So they're going to be the number one backcourt in the league, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Hero comes off the bench.
I didn't count them because
I mean, you could use Duncan Robinson if you want.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Yeah, just keep going. I'm not one. I'm listening. I'm a spectator right here.
Even though he's not playing, Ben Simmons and Seth Curry.
No, that's not in the conversation. Plus, they're never going to play together again. So also that's not in the conversation.
LaMelo Ball and Terry Rozier.
Again, I considered that. I would rather have Bane than Rozier at this point. And I think I would rather have Morant than LaMelo, but I'm not 100% sold on that.
I'm with you on that one's close. Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie?
No.
Trae Young and Bogdan Bogdanovic?
No, because
the thing about it is that Bane really defends and is probably only going to get better as a defender. And so that's one of the things, you know, some of the things that you're thinking about here, like that, you know, compared to the Atlanta backcourt, Memphis is, you know, the defensive aspect of Bane, if he's going to continue to keep shooting this way, it's a factor.
Yeah, I like Bane better than Bogdanovic, and Morant Young, I think, is a conversation.
I think Trey is better than Ja right now, so I would say that one's pretty close too. Again, debatable.
He has accomplished more, but you know, also the one taste of the playoffs Ja got, he put up 30-something per game.
He was awesome. The Jets, you know? And he knocked the Warriors out at home in the play-in tournament.
Yes.
All right, speaking of the Warriors, Steph Curry and Jordan Poole.
Well, I put Steph Curry and whoever starts at two.
Right.
They were one of the ones that I'm not going to sit here and debate. That's like right. Steph Curry and whoever's at two. By the way, I didn't update this with their last game, but Poole didn't play. Steph with Poole for the season, net rating plus 14.6. Steph with Gary Payton the second, net rating plus 29.2.
That's pretty good.
And then, you know, you put Clay, it's like I said, Steph and whoever. Like, that's right. Steph gets the nod.
Chris Paul and Devin Booker, I think we'd agree, is ahead of that.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously one of the top two or one backcourts in the league.
Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell ahead of that.
That's one of the ones I put also ahead of them, and I'm not going to debate. So I'll just tell you the four I put above Bane, Ja with I can't argue.
Mm-hmm.
CP3, Booker, Harden, Kyrie, Steph and whoever, Mitchell, Conley. And then I think there's a conversation about any other backcourt in the league.
Yeah. And to be clear, I wasn't doing that to make fun of McMahon. I think what's more interesting is that I agree with you. I think those four for sure are better. And then after that, like, I think the Bulls backcourt is better, but you can make some argument, I think, for Memphis today. And some of the, like a lot of these other ones, it's a toss up. Like, the Atlanta one's a toss up. The Charlotte one's maybe a toss up. I'd probably go with Memphis, like you said. Miami's probably better. But again, Kyle's 35.
Well, like, that's cheating because that's not the starting backcourt.
Look, you could say Duncan Robinson too. In that exercise, because going through it, I thought the same thing. It was like a lot of these are, well, it's kind of a coin flip. And the thing is, it's the coin flip when these guys are at the start of their career, right?
Right.
That's the thing that it reinforces your point, which is that, look, top five as of right now, probably a little bit of a stretch. But if you'd said coming into the season, they were a top 10 backcourt, people would probably be like, I don't know about that. Like, Desmond Bane was okay last year. Now you look at it, pretty good argument that they're at minimum a top 10 backcourt. And they're, of all these pairings we're talking about, they're the youngest of all of them. They're both on the rookie deals.
Right. And you know, you didn't mention Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. I would say.
Right. I was going to get to that one. I think that I would rather have the Memphis backcourt at this point.
Well, and again, I think that backcourt has been one of the best in the league for years, and the expiration date has come. And so that's why I would take the Memphis group, just because I think that it's time for Portland to figure out a path for the future that does not include continuing with that.
Well, I personally would just rather have Desmond Bane and CJ McCollum right now. Personally, I mean, Desmond Bane's a two-way player and CJ McCollum is not.
Right. And Bane, like the fact that, and you know, the people say, oh, the Grizzlies went 10-2 without Morant. No, of course they're not better without him. That's the stupidest thing you possibly say. But I think that does tell you, obviously, there's some other talent in Memphis. And one thing that happened during that stretch is Desmond Bane, who, you know,
again, very good as a 3-and-D guy last year. They put the ball in his hands a lot. He was initiating. You know, he's creating. He's running pick and rolls. His off the dribble game has exploded this year. Last year, the vast majority of his shots were from 3-point range. And, you know, sometimes this most improved conversation, it's really a matter of, well, his minutes are going up. But if you look at Bane and you look at just, you know, his shot diet, he is doing so much more off the dribble this year. Whether it's the pull-up game, whether it's getting, to the rim, he's really been effective in transition. He's become a pretty much a complete two guard like overnight. And again, Desmond Bane's not an all-star this year. He's not ready to be in that conversation, but he's one of the better shooting guards in the league. And John Morant is an absolute, they asked him last night, I think it was Kyle Anderson. And then Morant was next going to the podium, about is Morant an all-star? And Anderson said to Morant, hey, they asked me if you're an all-star. And Morant said, are you bleeping me? absolutely an all-star.
He's got to be an all-star. Yes. I think that's safe to say.
One of the reasons why Bane went 30th is because he was a four-year player at TCU. Yeah. He happened to be one of the greatest players in TCU history, and he shot the heck out of the ball the whole time. but some teams don't draft guys who are 22 for the reason is because that they don't have much room to improve, that the player that you're going to get, typically you see guys, teams who take 4-year players typically are looking for, help from the player immediately. And so not only is his improvement notable and in the conversation for most improved, although there's this debate about making second year players.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm not going to be voting for Desmond Bane because I don't vote for second year players, but because you're supposed to improve in your second year, but he has been awesome.
But this sort of level of growth as a 23-year-old, not only is he young, but he's showing capacity to improve, which is one of the reasons why, again, people don't draft 4-year players. But there was a number of 4-year guys taken in like the top 35 picks this past year. So, it's not like they never do, but it's a thing.
And the 4-year thing was definitely a mark against Bane, and then his wingspan, which I believe he actually has a negative wingspan. I think his wingspan is an inch shorter than his height, which is rare, and not great. that was the other big mark against him. But he gets buckets and stops, and that's a really good combination. And again, last year he took 7.3 shots per game. 4 of those were threes. This year he's taking 14 shots a game. 6.8 are threes. Just his ability to create it for himself or create within the flow of the Grizzlies offense has just taken a drastic leap forward. And the efficiency is the same. This guy is averaging over 17 points a game at 47, 42, 94 shooting splits.
Just awesome. I mean, it's such a huge thing. And look, like that, you draft a guy who's that kind of player at 30, It's such a game changing thing, regardless of how you get the pick. Like you find a guy, it's like I'm not saying he's this level player, but it's like the Warriors finding Draymond Green at 35, like, or Rudy Gobert going to the Jazz at 27. Like you find a guy who's a high level starter late in the first round or in the second round. That's just such found money. It's just a massive, massive boost to your team. And look, the Grizzlies draft Ja second. They draft Jaren Jackson 4th, right? They haven't had another pick in that range again. And you'd think, all right, they probably have to have one more year where they struggle to really get that kind of third tent pole anchor guy. There's a chance they got that guy in a salary dump trade at 30, which would be just a huge thing for them, especially in a small payroll, market.
Their payroll with their, arguably their two best players. I have Jaren Jackson, who's still on a rookie deal. His money will kick in. Mm-hmm. Their three best players are all on rookie deals. His money will kick in next year. But they are 29th in payroll, $115 million. Their payroll is, $30 million less than the Celtics, and they're in 4th in the West. And And even with Jaren Jackson's money coming on, his salary increasing almost $20 million next year, his new contract, the Grizzlies are going to have salary cap space next summer.
And
because
and
these
you can
guys
say,
are you so young and cheap?
You can say, well, what are they going to do? They're going to max out the next Chandler Parsons, but there's more to salary cap space than overpaying in free agency, you know. And they have been able to use salary cap space to do things like, you know, trade for Iguodala and get a future pick. Now, at one point, you thought, ooh, that Warriors pick could be really something. I think it's not going to be a lottery pick at this point. I think it's pretty safe to say. But, you know, that's a front office that understands the challenges of operating in Memphis.
They'll take the 30th
pick.
How to
use cap space. Yeah, they will.
They'll take the 30th pick.
That's right.
They seem to be able to do good things with it.
But, hey, Dylan Brooks, a mid-second rounder. Yeah, I think at this point, Bane is clearly the Grizzlies' second-best player. And then the question remains, like, hey, can Jaren Jackson Jr. develop the consistency instead of just the glimpses? And can he consistently be a guy you can consider a franchise cornerstone on a contender-quality team?
I was just going to say, to your point about the front office in Memphis, so Zach Kleiman and those guys, like, they draft Brandon Clark at 21. They draft Xavier Tillman at 35. They get Bane at 30. They get Dylan Brooks in the second round. They get Kyle Anderson on a, I think, four-year, $30 million deal as a restricted free agent that the Spurs didn't match. He's a really, really good, swing forward, like the kind of guy every team in the league's looking for. A guy who can handle the ball, can guard multiple positions, really smart player. Like, they've just done a terrific job.
Listen, they've
of team
done so
building
well
across the board.
They've like had Tyus, one. They've had one big swing and miss, and that was the Justice Winslow trade, yeah, where they took back a ton of money, and the bet was on, you know, this guy who was a mid lottery pick, had some injury history, and there was a lot of upside, and it just that
but
one.
Even
fizzled.
That it was
Zach Kleiman went to Duke
on one
so.
Year. Well, it was basically
he likes Duke
on,
guys,
and it was taken on 1 year of salary too, right? Like basically they traded having $25 million in salary cap space for another year of salary at that number because they thought Justice Winslow could be a piece for them, but they didn't give
well,
up
remember,
any picks. They didn't
yeah,
give up any
they
other
took
stuff.
They took on Deion Waiters too. And then just,
they took on Waiters and well, then right, it was Gorgui Jing via
that's
via,
right.
Whatever. But yeah, so that was an expensive whiff, but every front office is going to have, you know, nobody's going to shoot 1,000% from the floor and their right. field goal percentage is awfully well,
even,
high.
Even like oh, signing ridiculous. Tyus Jones to be their backup point guard. You know, that deal happens. You're like, okay, cool. Tyus Jones is going to be a Grizzly. You move on. Well, when Harden or when Morant went down, they had a quality backup.
Yep.
And having a quality backup point guard really matters right. at times.
They trade for D'Anthony Melton. He's a really nice player. They get him on a good extension. You know, they've done a really, really good job. And they got all these young, interesting players. They've got depth. They've got cap space this summer. I mean, they got picks coming. Yeah. I mean, they got a really, really bright future. And that, you know, obviously the head of that is Ja, who's maybe my most favorite player in the league to watch. I mean, it's just
this,
they're a lot of
summer,
fun to watch.
This summer for the Grizzlies is very interesting because in 23-24, they have to pay Morant. They would potentially have to pay Dylan Brooks, who's only got 1 year left on his contract, and they would have to pay Brandon Clark, I think, is also a free agent. So they have to, you know, 23-24, they're going to be in some, you know, and by the way, their owner, who, when he came in the league, I've said this before, Robert Pera was regarded as sort of a guy who could barely hold on to his team, which is true. He barely was able to put the deal together. He has made an extreme, enormous fortune, already a rich guy. He's become filthy rich in the last 5 to 7 years. And so I'm not saying that he's going to just go willy-nilly, but I don't look at them based on what I know and think that they're not going to spend, even though they're in a small market that has been careful in the past. So,
yeah,
future is brighter for the Grizzlies. All right. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. McMahon, we hope you get out of protocol soon. Contact travel safe,
too.
Be healthy. And I'm trying to avoid that BB myself. I've avoided the beast so far. I spend like 10 minutes a day texting all the people that I know that are dealing with it. So, and we hope Bobby Marks, I think, is doing.
Oh, really? I haven't gotten a text from you yet. Jeez.
I don't think that's true. Check your
I'm just playing.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the new year. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.